now you're loud and clear. Thank you. Thank you very much, Mrs. LaRouche, for joining us on this week's edition of Platform Africa. The Skiller Institute, what do you do, if I may ask, just by the by?
Well, the Skiller Institute was founded by me in 1984 with the main purpose to work to establish a just new world economic order. This was basically in the tradition of the non-aligned movement, and we have been working on concrete development plans since the beginning of the 70s, that is even before the Skiller Institute was founded. For example, already in 1976, we developed a plan to develop Africa through massive investment in infrastructure. And in the meantime, we have developed plans for the development of Latin America, of Eurasia. So we are really talking about a complete reconstruction of the world economy. And that was the main activity of the Skiller Institute ever since.
Okay, good one. Now let's zoom into the main subject for discussion, the food crisis, the global food crisis. Is there really a food crisis?
Oh, absolutely. There is a food shortage, and you have a price problem. Now, there is a food shortage because the present world food crisis, which has already caused hunger riots to take place in 40 countries, is not just a food crisis, but it is merely one symptom of the end phase of the collapse of the financial system. Now, the reason why we are in a systemic crisis of the global financial system is the result of a paradigm shift which took place over the last 40 years, essentially really after President Nixon eliminated the fixed exchange rate system, shut down the old Bretton Woods system, and gave way to speculation. And ever since, you have one neoliberal measure favoring free trade, favoring the power of speculation to the disadvantage of production. So essentially, this has been going on since the latest 1971, and especially after the collapse of the Soviet Union, when the so-called globalization really took over worldwide and accelerated, you know, the free trade rule. There was also a concerted effort, attack on the agricultural production, where first the GATT organization and then later the WTO tried to impose free trade measures in most parts of the world. And that has actually de facto led to a decrease of food production and a lessening of the nourishment of the world population on an average level. So now in the last phase, you know, you had already warnings that we would face food riots, which were expressed by the present head of the FAO, Jacques Diouf, in last June. Warnings which were completely ignored by the international media and politics. And then when, as my husband predicted, it would happen, end of July, the subprime crisis triggered the collapse of the global financial system. And you had a credit crunch starting in August. And basically then the central banks decided to bail out their bankrupt banks by pouring liquidity. This liquidity was then used by hedge funds and speculators to not only speculate in oil and raw materials in general, but also especially in food, food production, food processing, food futures. And that has then led to the explosion of inflation in food prices, you know, depending cereals, milk, meat, basically between 20, 30, 40%. So you have two processes going on at the same time. You have a lowering of the actual physical production, and that has always been something the free trade faction of, you know, as Friedrich List, the German economy, called it, the British imperial free trade doctrine, what they always wanted, because only if you have a scarcity of a commodity that you can really speculate in it. But then you have on top of it now the explosion of speculation, and that is why I have called for immediate measures to intervene. My husband and I have demanded that the WTO should be closed down, because it's trying to now go with the final phase of the Doha round, eliminating all kinds of protectionist measures, and this is just completely insane in the light of what is happening today. And I have called for the immediate doubling of food production, because you have right now 1 billion people who are really seriously on the starvation level worldwide, and then you have another billion which is undernourished, and that was already the case before this present crisis broke out. And then, okay, if you,
Mrs. LaRouche, we'll come to the solutions, but what would you say are the causes? You know, of course, you've given us a historical perspective, but at present, what caused the food shortage or the price problem?
Well, there were just very interesting hearings in the American Senate, where a professor with the name of Greenberger gave a very important testimony at this hearing, and he put out very concretely which specific hedge funds are driving the prices up. And he named several of them, the worst one of them being Morgan Stanley, but also Merrill Lynch. And then he named a whole bunch of others. And he said these are the ones who are hoarding diesel oil, diesel fuel, heating oil. They are betting on futures food price to go up. So it's very concrete. I mean, if you consider that the entire food production worldwide is really 90% or so controlled by five of the major food cartels. You have the absolute criminal control of seeds by Monsanto. So it's not so ominous. You can actually say, who are these people? And this Professor Greenberger demanded that they should be banned from the United States, and then George Soros at the same hearing intervened and said, no, this would be very bad. They would leave the United States and go elsewhere. And Professor Greenberger said, well, let them go. They cannot do any damage to us if we drive them away. And then he actually said that he would try to get legislation that they would be hunted around the world to be shut down. And I think this is exactly what is necessary, because what you have right now is a complete clash between those forces in the world who say, no, we have to have food security, we have to have food sovereignty, we have to have an increase of production to protect our people. And on the other side, you have those who say, no, free trade, more trade, to the advantage, naturally, of those people who control the trade. So there is right now a war going on, and I think everybody has to take sides on which side of this war they are on.
It's interesting. So which side are you on?
You mean me?
Yes, Mrs. LaRouche.
Well, I'm very clearly on the side of those people who think that the entire system of globalization is an utter failure, that not only to speculate in food is a crime against humanity, but, for example, when you have almost a billion people being hungry, and the hunger is not a joke. I think in your country, people also have a sense of it. In other places, it may be even worse. For example, when in Haiti, the people were rioting in the street, they said, it does not matter if the police shoots us, because if we are not get shot, then we die of hunger anyway. And that expresses a level of desperation, you know. And, you know, when the Pope, the previous Pope, John Paul II, traveled through Africa some years ago, he said, you know, when people are living in utmost poverty and cannot even have a meal, they cannot have a house to live in, you know, you cannot even talk about human rights, because, you know, the very basis for dignity of people is not there. So therefore, I'm very happy that at the FAO conference, which is just taking place in Rome, the UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights and the Right to Food, Mr. De Schutter, basically called the question of adequate food a new, that is actually a human rights question. And he basically called for a new deal in agriculture worldwide to provide for adequate food on a national level. And I think that that is what has to become a battle cry for the whole world right now.
Now, Mrs. LaRouche, what is your assessment? You earlier mentioned the World Trade Organization and so on, but what's your assessment of the World Bank, of the IMF, and of course the World Trade Organization as far as the food situation is concerned? Your response?
Well, I think that the, as I said, you know, the neoliberal model, as it was developed by Nixon, by Kissinger, by Schulz after 71, and which went to many phases, you know, in the in the 80s, Reaganomics and Thatcher economics, and then after the collapse of the Soviet Union, the unbridled neoliberal policies of globalization. I mean, this system is utterly bankrupt. It is more bankrupt today than communism was bankrupt in 1989. And, you know, I think that if you look at the damage, what these neoliberal policies have done, I think then that it amounts to genocide. Because, you know, I mean, if you look at the world situation, if you would use existing technologies, it would be very easy to overcome world hunger in a very short period of time, maybe half a year, maybe 1 year, make a crash program to eliminate poverty maybe in 5 years, and to have a decent living standard for all human beings on this planet in one generation. And if you are not doing it when you could do it, well, I think that that is a crime. And I think these people who are pushing these policies for the advantage of very few are, you know, really criminals. That is my honest conviction. I mean, if you look at how with globalization the very rich, the billionaires, have become more rich, but that in all parts of the world, the majority of the people, 80-90% in most places, 60-70% in other places, have become poorer and poorer, then this system is clearly not just, and it has to be changed. I think we have to have an urgent agenda to put a just new world system on the agenda of world governments right now.
And for clarification, Mrs. LaRouche, you're saying that this neoliberal model that you talked about, the effect of this neoliberal model or globalization amounts to genocide?
Well, I think if you look at the realities, there can be no question about it. As a matter of fact, you know, if you, I mean, this goes all back to the British Empire. And, you know, if you look at, for example, the writings of Friedrich List, who was a German economy, he was the author of the Customs Union, and he, when he went in 1825 to the United States, he made the sharp difference between the American system of economy, going back to Alexander Hamilton, to the question of that the aim of the economy must be the common good of the people. And he confronted that with the British system, basically, you know, a system which is only benefiting, you know, the imperial power of Great Britain at the time. Then I think you can really see that there is an unbroken tradition which, you know, today governs globalization. And if you look that 80% of all hedge funds have their headquarters in the Cayman Islands, which belongs to the Commonwealth, you know, then you can actually see who is running these policies. So I think that, you know, when Friedrich List in 1827, he actually accused Adam Smith that he only wrote his books not to educate people, but to confuse them to the benefit of England, to make the aims nebulous. And, you know, I think that that is still today, because people use all kinds of nice words. They say appropriate technology. They say renewable energies. And they have all these nice words. But what it amounts to is really a system which benefits only very few speculators and which is at the disadvantage of the vast majority of the human mankind today.
Interesting. Is 90.5 FM your power station? This is Platform Africa Live and is live across the world on www.gfmradio.com and www.myradiogoldlive.com. My name is Mutala Muntari and I'm here with our special guest. She's live in Germany, Mrs. Zepp LaRouche. She is the international president of the Skiller Institute and chairperson of the German political party Citizens Movement Solidarity, and of course also a journalist for Executive Intelligence Review, and also wife of the American economist and former Democratic presidential candidate Lyndon LaRouche. And let me remind you of the text line if you're listening to us in Germany or in Holland or America or even in Afghanistan, wherever across the globe. You can reach us on this text line, 233-244-679-711. That's 233-244-679-711. And if you're listening here in Ghana, the short code is 1405, MTN short code 1405. Sending your text messages. Thanks to Unique Trust Financial Services, your loan in less than 48 hours. And they're proud to be associated with Platform Africa. They say no, and Unique Trust Financial Services say why not. The topic for discussion, the global food crisis, and we have on the line from Germany, Mrs. Helga Zepp LaRouche, and she's on the line. A very interesting discussion we're having here with Mrs. LaRouche. And back to you, Mrs. LaRouche. So you're saying that the World Bank, the IMF, and the World Trade Organization are actually overseeing a genocidal global economic system. Am I correct?
Yes, that's what they do.
That's okay. So let me ask you this, Mrs. LaRouche. How true is the assertion that the Food and Agriculture Organization did a forecast in October last year of a situation like this and made plans to avert the present situation? I know you're in the know of this. What went wrong, really? Why do we have this crisis if the FAO knew about this, if there were any warning signals?
Well, I mean, it is at least appropriate to ask a couple of questions, because when Jacques Diouf, the head of the FAO, warned in June last year about food crisis. He warned again in October. And from October onward, you had food riots in 40 countries. In December, he basically asked for $17 million worth of food aid to buy seeds for the poorest farmers in different countries. And it was he could not manage to get the money together. So in April, Mr. Diouf accused the rich countries of not wishing to help the poor countries. And it was only end of April when the IMF and the World Bank had their annual conferences that all of a sudden you had a big discussion about food riots, you had TV coverage and so forth. But, you know, then one has to ask the question, why was this information being suppressed? Why was it only revealed after the spring seeding season was basically over and was too late? So now basically there is a big scramble to get the seed for the next season in the fall. But I think, you know, I cannot help to, you know, have in mind that you have Malthusians, you have people who have been advertising for a long time that the world population should be reduced to 2 billion people or even less. You have organizations like the World Wildlife Fund, and you have Prince Philip, of all people, the husband of the Queen of England, who is on the record, and you can go to the internet and look it up. There's tons of quotes from him where he said that he believes the world population is too big. And there's this famous quote when he said that if he is being reincarnated, he wants to be reincarnated as a specially deadly virus so that he can help to solve the population problem more efficiently. Then you have many other people who are Malthusian in their argumentation. So, you know, I cannot separate such statements by relatively powerful individuals from, you know, the effect this policy has. And then one comes to the conclusion, maybe there is an element of intent in all of that. Or the minimum one can say that it's just an oligarchical view where some of these people who are in leading positions could not care less about, you know, if hundreds of millions of people are dying of hunger because, you know, they just think, you know, there are too many people anyway. And the oligarchical system basically thinks that it's only the oligarchical elite which deserves a good life, and the majority of people are not better than human cattle. So I think one has to have a very hard look at the motives, and naturally then you have other people who are just greedy and they couldn't care less if people die as the result of their greed. And I think that in that situation it must be governments, sovereign governments, which come forward and protect the common good of the people against these speculators. And you know, I think that in a certain sense there is this crisis is not an accidental crisis, but it is the result of a completely wrong economic philosophy.
These neoliberal forces that you talk about are powerful forces. Those are the WTO and so on, very powerful forces. How do you think, or what do you think those of us here in Africa can do? Because at the end of the day, we are the receiving end. What can a continent like Africa do to such a about such a situation that you've described?
Well, unfortunately, right now, Europe is not a positive factor in this picture, because the present trend to impose the European Union treaty on Europe, which the so-called Lisbon Treaty, means that Europe is assuming an almost imperial attitude. So I'm not, you know, positive on Europe as such. I hope to defeat this oligarchical structure and that we go back to sovereign nation states in Europe, but that is not the situation right now. My husband, Mr. LaRouche, has advocated since a long time that because of the tremendous power of the international financial institutions, that only if you have the four most powerful nation states in the world, that is Russia, China, India, but also a changed United States, that only if these four governments get together and put a new world financial system on the agenda in the tradition of Franklin D. Roosevelt and the Bretton Woods system, and then have other nations group around that, that you have a chance to really address this problem. Now, as you know, that China, foremost, and to a lesser extent, India, and also Russia, and in the last period, also Japan, they have taken a different attitude to African development. For example, China has done a lot of very useful infrastructure projects. Naturally, China has a benefit also because it gets raw materials. But what is wrong if both sides benefit? You know, there is a big freak out in Europe about that and in some quarters in the United States. But, you know, my view is that, you know, nobody prevented Europe from doing exactly the same thing what China is doing, namely to help to build infrastructure. And I think that that is definitely something which should be strengthened. I think it was very good that at the recent conference in Yokohama, end of May in Japan, where 52 African nations participated, there was the plan made to double the food production in Africa. And also Russia has announced a new 5-year farm food plan, which is supposed to overcome the food shortage which developed in Russia in the 90s, in the Yeltsin period, and the new government of Putin and now Medvedev, they want to not only have food self-sufficiency in Russia, but they also want to make Russia a major exporter of food. So I think Russia also has offered international cooperation for every country in the whole world which wants to develop peaceful nuclear energy. I think this is very positive, and I'm very happy that Ghana is planning to develop its own nuclear peaceful energy. So all of these are very important steps. But I think what really is needed, and this will become clearer in the next month, you know, probably before the fall, that the financial crisis will accelerate at an unprecedented speed. And therefore, I think that nothing short of putting the question of a new financial architecture, you know, on the table is going to help. And my proposal is to discuss this now among many countries. For example, I think it would be very good if the African countries would develop a coherent plan for African development. I mean, I have, you know, basically suggested that the African Union should adopt one plan and just tell the whole world what is needed to overcome the development. For example, if you look at the map of Africa, there are no or almost no ports. There is no railway from the north to the south or the east to the west. And, you know, if you don't have infrastructure, an integrated system of railway, of highways, of waterways, of irrigation, of desalinization, of food reprocessing, of food irradiation, you cannot even have agriculture, because if you don't have this infrastructure, there is no way how you can even process the food, even if you would have a good harvest. So, you know, I suggest that people should take a look at the map of Europe, and then you see how tight the infrastructure is. You can go by ship from the Black Sea through the Danube system, through channels to the Rhine. Then you can go to a major port. You ship your containers to rail systems. You bring it by trucks in the last part of the whole transport. And that kind of an integrated infrastructure grid is what Africa needs. So if the African countries would just get together and say, you know, for the sake of us all, we put all bilateral tensions aside, we put all the, you know, all difficulties which existed from the colonial period and are relics from, you know, a period which is really not our fault, but are, you know, leftovers from the colonial time. We put all of this aside and we say, what is the infrastructure plan Africa needs? And then we present it as a unity, you know, maybe through the African Union to the world and invite people, say, look, if, are you helping us to develop, to overcome this? Because I think the world has reached a moment where, you know, either we have all together, the human family as one family, all together the moral fiber to put the political and economic order of this planet in cohesion with natural law, with the real laws of the universe, or else we all will go up, down in a dark age. So I think it's the moment which is really, you know, it's a make or break for generations to come. And either we use this moment and say, you know, this is now the time to really overcome problems of the past and have a crash program. And we have, you know, developed this idea of the Eurasian land bridge. I don't know if you are familiar with it, but for the sake of your listeners, let me just briefly outline it. When the Iron Curtain came down in 89 and then especially 91 when the Soviet Union disintegrated, we said, okay, now there is no reason why we should not integrate the entire Eurasian continent through an integrated a system of development corridors, railways, highways, waterways, make these development corridors like 100 kilometers wide, put in communication systems, put in energy production and distribution, and therefore develop the infrastructure in the landlocked areas of Eurasia and make them, you know, as profitable and productive as the areas which normally are only located at oceans or river systems, and connect the population and industry centers of Europe with those of Asia. Now, this proposal we first made in 89, and then we developed it more until 91. And, you know, for a long time, we were like shouters in the desert. We made hundreds of conferences in Delhi, in Beijing, in Moscow, in many other places. And now, in the last couple of years, a lot of these projects are coming into being. For example, the Russian government is building is planning to build a huge railway from connecting the Siberian, Trans-Siberian Railway all the way through the Bering Strait, a tunnel 100 kilometer long under the ocean, connecting it to Alaska. Now, if this project is completed, which the Russian government wants to have completed in about 20 years, then it will be more easy to travel from Chile by train via the Bering Strait to Mumbai in India. It will be faster than to go by ship over the ocean. Now, there are a couple of such projects which really would make a complete transformation of the world economy. And there is a tremendous momentum between China, India, and Russia, who have formed a strategic partnership. And we have proposed already from the beginning, from 91 on, that this Eurasian land bridge should be connected through Egypt into Africa. Then we want to build a tunnel or a bridge from Sicily to Tunisia, and another line should go via Gibraltar. And that way you would bring this Eurasian development into Africa and connect it with an all-African infrastructure grid. And, you know, I think that that is the way to go. That has to be discussed among governments. That has to be, you know, there should be conferences. People should start to work on details of the plan. But I think the upcoming conference of the UN General Assembly in September should be the place where all of these discussions about a just new world economic order and how it would look concretely through the worldwide land bridge That should be put on the agenda, because the alternative is a collapse of civilization, and that is not acceptable.
Well, as to whether it's going to be on the agenda is another issue, isn't it?
I couldn't hear you.
As to whether it's going to be placed on the agenda of the upcoming UN General Assembly in September is another issue, isn't it?
Well, I think that depends on the courage of a couple of leading forces. And I'm not so pessimistic because, you see, last month there was a very important meeting in Yekaterinburg in Russia, where the foreign ministers of Russia, China, and India met. And then the next day they included the foreign minister of Brazil. And they are planning to have other countries associated visit South Africa, Mexico, and so forth. And I think there is a motion where, you know, many of these Asian countries realize that they have to change course because they are vulnerable in the collapse of the financial system. And if they don't do measures to protect themselves, they face terrible crises too. So I think we are really in a changing period, in a revolutionary period, and I think it's time for new and bold ideas.
Now, Mrs. LaRouche, the UN Food and Agriculture Summit is ongoing in Rome. Do you have hope that this may turn things around somewhat?
Well, I think what happened in Rome so far is exactly what I thought would happen, namely that the dividing line is very clear. You had people such as Mr. Zöllig from the, from the American trade delegation, who went to the summit and said exactly, you know, what was to be expected, that, you know, there should be more free trade, and he, you know, offered short-term food aid, you know, but, you know, the completion of the Doha round attached to it. Then you had other people going in the same direction. But you had also a whole bunch of people who spoke very differently, namely the representative of Kazakhstan, for example, announced a very ambitious program to increase the food production in Kazakhstan. And he said, for us, the end of free trade is really what has happened. Then, as I said, you know, the special rapporteur for human rights of the United Nations, de Schutter, he is the successor of Mr. Jean Ciegler, who actually called biofuel a crime against humanity. So this Mr. de Schutter made a very good speech by introducing a resolution saying that the whole food issue has to be treated as a human rights issue. And then he quoted all the articles of the UN Charter, why food security is a human rights. Then he demanded a new deal in agriculture. And you know what a new deal means. It refers to the policy of Franklin D. Roosevelt, which he introduced in 1933 when he became president and when the United States was in a deep depression. And with the New Deal, Roosevelt at the time brought the United States out of this depression by simply giving state credits to anybody who wanted to produce something useful. So, you know, we have been campaigning for a new deal and a new Bretton Woods since many years, and I have myself issued several calls for a new Bretton Woods system, which have been signed by hundreds of VIPs around the world. And there has been a discussion for a new deal for Europe by the new finance and economic minister from Italy, Mr. Tremonti. The former president and now minister president of Russia, Putin, has called for a new deal for Russia. President Kirchner in Argentina has called for a new deal for Latin America. So there is a debate, and I think we need just to have more discussion about this.
Now, Mrs. LaRouche, the U.S., still on the UN Food and Agriculture Summit being held in Rome, the U.S. says biofuels contribute 3% to the crisis we're having, the global food crisis. And the UN says, no, it contributes 65%. Biofuels, how much of an issue is it? How important, how central is it to the global food crisis?
Well, I think it is important because if you consider that with one tank full of biofuel, of one single car, one simple filling of your tank, a human being can live half a year or more. So, you know, therefore, at a point when you have a billion people going hungry every day, I think it is perverse and degenerate and insane and immoral to use food for fuel. It's just not right. First of all, economically, it's stupid because you are not saving the environment one bit. All you're doing is helping the speculators. And if you would stop using food for biofuel worldwide immediately, you could feed 500 million people with that. Now, for me, that is not a little issue. It's a big issue. It's not the totality of the problem, but it's one of the immediate measures one could do to help to solve the problem.
Now, Mrs. LaRouche, you're saying this issue of biofuels, the world continuing with biofuels is economically foolhardy. And here we are, the representative of the United States at the UN Food and Agriculture Summit in Rome says it's going to continue. So where does that leave the world?
Oh, fortunately, this gentleman is not the only American. You know, I have issued this call for food doubling in May. And if you go on the internet, you go to the www.larouchepec.com website, or you go to the SchillerInstitute.com website, you find there a list of the people who have signed my call in the meantime. And you will find that there are many elected American officials, both acting state representatives, former senators, many trade unionists, mayors, city councils, and it is actually a growing movement worldwide. For example, just today I got the message that 8 sitting congressmen of the PRD party in Mexico have signed my call. The head of the leading agricultural research university, a leading trade union in Mexico, the head of the agricultural commission in the parliament of Argentina. There are many websites in Russia, many signers from other Latin American countries. We have a farm commission in Europe of farmers who absolutely agree with me. So it's a growing mobilization, you know, and, you know, we are not looking at countries just as the, you know, official elected officials, but we are trying to take the interest of the lower 80% of the population who need somebody who defends their interest. And I think that we are in a situation where that question is going to be decisive, because it's the system of the financial oligarchy which is failing right now. So, you know, I mean, if you think what it means, what I'm saying, you know, when I say that the globalization system is more bankrupt today than communism was in 89 to 91, nobody would have ever thought that the Soviet Union would collapse, except my husband, who already predicted that it would happen in 1983, where he said if the Soviet Union continues with their then existing policies, they would collapse after 5 years. And it did take 6 years, so he was off by 1 year, but he was on the record of having predicted it absolutely precisely. So I think that we are right now in a situation where you will see that all schemes which people thought would work are not going to work, and there will be a tremendous opportunity to use this crisis to change a system which needs to be changed anyway. And, you know, the Chinese have this sign, this character for a crisis, and it means the same at the same time a chance. And I think that's the way to look at it. Use the crisis as a chance to correct what was wrong for a long time.
In case you just tuned in, this is Radio Gold 90.5 FM stereo here in Accra. We also live worldwide on www.myradiogoldlive.com and gfmradio.com. Live from Germany, we have Mrs. Helga Zepp-LaRouche. She's the international president of the Schiller Institute and chairperson of the German political party Citizens Movement Solidarity, as well as a journalist for Executive Intelligence Review and wife of the American economist and former Democratic presidential candidate, Lyndon LaRouche. And you can send in your text messages if you're listening here in Ghana. MTN short code 1405, of course, you know the topic, the global food crisis, MTN short code 1405, that's MTN short code 1405, and if you're listening on the World Wide Web, if you're listening somewhere in Iraq or in Afghanistan or in Kazakhstan, you can call. Or even in Sudan, you can send a text message. And, of course, you can call later when the phone lines are open. But this is the text line through which you can reach us, 233-244-679-711. That's 233-244-679-711. Again, 233-244-679-711. My name is Mutala Muntari, and the program is produced by Roland Aqua Stevens and sponsored by Unit Trust Financial Services. Your loan in less than 48 hours. They say no, we say why not. And coming back to you, Mrs. LaRouche, you scratched the surface a bit on your international campaign for doubling of food production, but tell us more. What exactly is the campaign about, and how effective is it?
The campaign. Did you ask how effective the campaign is?
Yes, what is it exactly about, and how effective is it?
Well, I think it is very effective because my call for doubling of the food production has been published by many countries. For example, last Sunday, the official Egyptian state paper, Al-Akham, had on their front page a picture of President Mubarak, a picture of myself, a picture of the EIR, our magazine, which you just mentioned, and it reports extensively about my call to double food production, and then basically said that this is exactly the line with which President Mubarak would go to the FAO conference in Rome. And then the next day, on Monday, they had more coverage, basically discussing more details of my proposal. Then, you know, this proposal was published by almost every major newspaper in the Gulf states, in Bahrain, in Qatar, in Saudi Arabia, in Syria, as I said, in many Russian web pages. Then you have a huge discussion about it in Latin America. And we are continuing with this campaign until, you know, it becomes the dominant issue. Because it's the only answer to the present system. Now, if you have right now a situation where the free trade faction says Africa should develop cash crops and export, food. Why? You know, so that then the African countries could pay their foreign debt. Now, I think this is totally crazy. I think what needs to be done first is you have to have food security, you have to have national sovereignty, and, I think that, I think if you now look how many forces are echoing Maybe they were inspired by what I said. Maybe they came independently to the same conclusion. It doesn't matter. You have a growing movement of people who are talking the same way I'm talking. For example, at the FAO conference, the Chinese Minister of Agriculture, Mr. Sun Chengxai, basically also blasted the biofuel and also talked about food security for all is a fundamental human right, and basically demanded the eradication of hunger, malnutrition on a global level. Then you had President Wade from Senegal, who also spoke at the FAO conference, and he is now proposing a great green wall to be built 7,000 kilometers from Dakar to Djibouti, to basically have a 5 kilometer wide green strip across the desert with trees, to create a new green lung, and in this way fight against the climatic changes in a really meaningful way. And alongside of the great green wall, he is planning to build water capture basins, because a lot of quantity of water is lost by evaporation. Then Japan wants to help Africa to make the same kind of green revolution what Asia did in the 60s. So, you know, and I could probably add a lot of more people. For example, the Russian agricultural minister Gordeev, who is, by the way, a clear opponent of the WTO, he is also pushing, you know, to increase food production. So all I'm saying is, while this all is not yet a coherent policy, but all of a sudden, after many years of supposed globalization, people would say there is no alternative to globalization. But what you are seeing now is a very broad discussion of many countries and forces in the world who want to go back to the pre-GATT, pre-WTO kind of a system. For example, even in Europe, which, you know, as I said, is not in the greatest condition right now because of the European Union bureaucracy, you have a very important discussion by the French agricultural minister Barnier, who is defending the European Common Agricultural Policy, which is essentially a protectionist system, which comes still from the area of Adenauer and de Gaulle. And he's supported by Seehofer, the German agricultural minister, by Saya, the Italian agricultural minister, and Barnier actually proposed the same system of the CAP, a joint African common agricultural policy modeled on the European one for Africa, for Latin America, and so forth. So I think that there is plenty of motion, and I think it is very, very important that people in Ghana and other African countries really follow this, because this is a big change which is occurring right now.
And there's another dimension that I'd want you to look at, Mrs. LaRouche, as far as the global food crisis is concerned, and that is the crude oil price spike on the global market. How does it relate to the food crisis?
Well, obviously, you know, the speculators have jumped on the oil in the same way. And if you have oil prices of now 135 plus, I don't know what the last was today, but I mean, this, remember that an oil price of $25 is neutral to the economy. People were saying for a long time, if the oil price would go up to $50, this would detonate things. Then they said, oh no, if it goes to 80, that's the end. If it goes to 100, that's the end. Now we are 135, and people are predicting it may go up to $200. And obviously, you know, this is fueled by the speculators, you know, and obviously also the fact that the fossil fuels are becoming less, you know, available. So you have a clear need to think about a different energy source, and the obvious way to go is peaceful nuclear energy. And there in particular, I think the high temperature reactor, the pebble bed reactor, which is right now developed especially by South Africa and by China, is the direction to look in, because this is an inherently safe variety of nuclear energy, because it was designed to shut down if there is the slightest irritation, and nothing can ever happen. But I think more fundamentally, I think one has to really consider the fact that we are right now globally in a hyperinflationary explosion, which can be only compared to what happened in Germany in 1923. Now, in 1923, when Germany was forced through the Versailles Treaty to come up with the entire cost and reparation for World War One, even, you know, no historian today would maintain the point that Germany was the only guilty party of World War One. Nevertheless, the Versailles Treaty imposed all of this debt payment and reparations on Germany. So then the Reichsbank started to print money, disregarding of the strength of the German economy. And then, you know, in 1923, this whole thing exploded, and you had from the spring of 23, when £1 of bread would cost maybe one Reichsmark, it went up to 5, to 100, to 1,000, to 1,000,000, to 1,000,000,000. And then in November, it became so absurd that people were literally shoving money with wheelbarrows to the baker, because half an hour later the inflation would even have, you know, gone up again. And then in the November it came to an end. Now, because of globalization, what you see right now is that that hyperinflation is developing around the globe in every single country of the planet. And, you know, as long as the central banks, starting with the Federal Reserve and the Bank of England, have responded to the banking crisis with pouring liquidity into the market by, you know, trying to bail out the banks who are sitting on three-digit trillion sums of toxic waste, of worthless papers, which they cannot sell, because if they start selling them, it would turn out that they're worth almost nothing. And therefore, as long as the central banks are trying to bail out these banks by pouring liquidity, this is fueling the hyperinflation. And therefore, you know, this is not going to get any better. It's going to get worse. And if, you know, we are supposed to avoid a terrible catastrophe by this hyperinflationary explosion, then the only measure is to do what my husband has proposed since a long time, namely to have an emergency conference on the level of heads of state to declare the present bank system to be bankrupt and to go for the reorganization and create a new system in the tradition of Roosevelt's old Bretton Woods. So that is the only solution. And then you have to have a ban on speculation. I think speculation on raw materials, and especially food, but also basic raw materials like energy, like gas, like oil, they should not be allowed. Why should something be allowed which only fills the pockets of a few speculators, but which is, as a consequence, killing people? I think it is up to the governments to make laws. And as I already said earlier, there was a very important hearing in the American Senate which started to take up this question. So I think this is all now going to be on the table sooner or later, and you will see dramatic changes.
Right. We're going for a commercial break. Interesting point. Mrs. LaRouche, just hold on. There's a 60-second commercial break, and then we come back, read some of your text messages, open the phone lines, and then take concluding remarks from Mrs. LaRouche. Of course, somebody wants to know how to join your campaign. I'm sure when we come back from the commercial break, you'll answer that. We'll be back after this short break.
Kweku, I think you need to go to Unique Trust for this money before you lose this contract.
Mm.
You know, the banks will never approve this loan for you in 3 days.
Me? Unique Trust? Please, oh, I don't want trouble. I hear when you go for their money, you'll never be able to make it. They'll even arrest you if you default.
Oh, Kweku, I have been with Unique Trust for almost 5 years.
Mm.
And they are the best financial partners you can ever have. Forget the rumors in town. They are from people who go for loans and refuse to pay. My business would have collapsed if it hadn't been for Unique Trust.
Mm.
Ask Kojo about his big financial, or even farming, about his booming printing business.
Wow.
It's all due to Unique Trust. Even if you're having trouble repaying your loan, Unique Trust is friendly and are ready to listen to you anytime, any day. They can arrange flexible repayment terms, so go for the loan.
Just call 665-222 and your loan will be ready in less than 48 hours with a smile. Unique Trust. Achieving is our attitude. Unique Trust. They say no, we say why not.
Thanks for staying right there, 90.5 FM, your power station, Platform Africa, live here in Accra and live worldwide on myradiogoldlive.com and gfmradio.com. And the text line for our global listeners, 233-244-679-711. That's 233-244-679-711. And we're discussing this all-important topic, the global food crisis. Of course, if you're here in Accra or in Ghana, you can send us a text message, MTN short code 1405. Mrs. LaRouche is here with us. She is she's live from Germany. She's the international president of the Schiller Institute and chairperson of the German political party Citizens Movement Solidarity. She's as well a journalist for Executive Intelligence Review and a wife of the American, wife of the American economist and former Democratic presidential candidate, Lyndon LaRouche. Mrs. LaRouche, somebody wants to know how do I join your campaign if I want to? Is there a specific website address? If I'm in Ghana, how do I join your campaign?
Well, I mean, first of all, you can contact us on the internet. You can either join the American Schiller Institute .com webpage, or you can join the German one. We have a Danish one, we have a French one, a Swedish one. Actually, you know, the Schiller Institute exists in, I would say, maybe almost 60 countries around the world in different forms. We have conferences, we have all kinds of political activities, we have all kinds of campaigns. You can sign my call for doubling the food production. You can help us to sponsor conferences in, you know, your countries. We could, you know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things. Write us an email. Get in contact with us. Spread the idea. Take my call. Print it out. Distribute it to the parliamentarians of your country. Collect signatures from trade unionists. You know, bring it to the attention of agricultural professors at universities. Organize students. Get young people to discuss this. I mean, this is very important because we have a worldwide youth movement, the so-called LaRouche youth movement, which exists actually in 5 continents. These are young people which, you know, follow the ideas, especially of my husband. And, you know, we basically think that, you know, this is not a question of just us elderly people. I don't know how old you are, but, you know, I mean, it's a question of the youth. The youth have to live the next 50, 70, 80 years. And it is their right to decide too, you know, what kind of a world do they want to live in? Do they want to live in the kind of world which, you know, Bush and Cheney have created by, you know, calling 100 years of war against terrorism? Now, I don't think young people want to live in 100 years of war. I think young people have a right to decide themselves, you know, what should be the economic policies, how should the countries be organized. So get young people to join, you know, make student meetings, have discussions, download from the internet, from our websites, these articles, which I have lots of background. You know,
okay, the website address once again is www.schillerinstitute.com.
Yes, in the English one is written institute with an E, .com. In German it's without an E, because Schiller Institute in German is written without an E. But then you have larouchepec.com, larouchepap. LaRouche Peck is written LaRouche and then PAC.com or LaRouche Pub, pub for publications.com. That way you can contact us and we answer you for sure.
Okay. And LaRouche spelled LaRouche. Am I correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. And then LaRouche Peck, LaRouche Park PAC. Okay. We open the phone lines now on 0213033492. The phone line actually 0213033492. You prefix this number with country and area codes 233213033492. That is if you're calling, if you are one of our global listeners. There's a text message here. A question for Mrs. LaRouche. The CO2 regulations being pushed down upon the developing countries makes development very difficult. But isn't these so-called global warming measures just another neo-colonial scheme to prevent development for developing developing countries rather? Thanks. This one is from Benjamin in Denmark. What's your take on that, Mrs. LaRouche, on this CO2 issue?
Yes, I think absolutely it is a neo-colonial scheme, because global warming, there are climate changes, absolutely, but they're taking place as long as our planet exists. You have ice ages, you have warming periods, you have small ice ages, you have small warming periods. And these changes depend on the constellation of the Earth to the Sun, of the angle, you know, of the Earth's axis to the Sun, of the different beams, of the position of our solar system in the larger Milky Way. And these are cycles which are, you know, 100,000 years, 40,000 years, 20,000 years long, and they are repeating all the time. So, you know, there has been periods where you could grow wine in Northern Ireland. There have been periods where there were giraffes in the Sahara, which was, blooming countryside at that time. So all these changes really have nothing to do with man's activity. And as a matter of fact, if you take the CO2 effect on the global weather changes, I always use the image of a huge elephant, which is the, you know, cyclical stellar causes for climate change. And then you have a tiny little fly sitting on the head of the elephant, and that is the CO2 emission coming from man. So it's a swindle. And then if you know that, for example, Al Gore is actually the CEO of two hedge funds speculating in CO2 emissions, then you have a first glance of what is really at stake.
Interesting. A text message here, Mrs. LaRouche, from Sam in Batrona says, what does Mrs. LaRouche think of bioregionalism? What she says is not much different from the worst aspects of globalization. Massive structures, nuclear, destruction of small, fragile ecosystems. Your response?
I could not hear you. The bioenergy, did you say?
Bioregionalism.
I don't understand this word.
think it was bioregionalism.
Oh, bioregionalism. Well, I think that, you know, I think obviously the way to protect the environment is, you know, by using modern technology. And, you know, obviously we want to be very careful about, you know, protecting what needs to be protected. But, you know, there is a fundamental difference between human beings and animals. The human being is different from all other species by his and her ability to come up with new scientific universal principles, which then, if they are adequate and if they are valid, are called scientific progress. And if you then apply the scientific progress in the production, then this leads to an increase in the living standard of the population and the longevity of the people. Now, that is actually a law of the universe, because you have to have increasing rates of energy flux density in the production process, because whenever you halt, then sooner or later you come to the limits of that particular level. And then you have the absolute necessity to come up with an invention which increases the productivity and which increases the power of man in nature. Now, if man would have stayed at the same level, then already, you know, maybe 20,000 years ago or 10,000 years ago, when the population potential of the Earth was maybe 5 million people, there would have come a collapse of, you know, the whole development. But because man then was able to develop agriculture, then he was able to develop the use of fossil fuels, of the steam engine, and now we are reaching, you know, even higher energy densities with the potential of nuclear energy, and soon, hopefully, fusion energy. And then we can move to not only using waste to retransport it into new raw materials, but we can create new isotopes and actually move in a completely different regime of the production. And, you know, I think that we are really at the beginning of a development of humankind.
Thank you very much, Mrs. LaRouche. A text message here from UOFI says that indeed all Africa should today mourn and honor Kwame Nkrumah, what he sought to do to unite Africa sociopolitically and economically years ago is what the Eurasians are trying to do today. Africa should concentrate on intra-trade. And okay, you didn't place your name in there, but another text message here says grasp of global issues and their impact on the economy. The press's grasp of global issues and their impact on the economy is so poor that the president's ministers have taken advantage of this ignorance. Okay, thanks for your text message. The text line is sealed for now because our time is almost up. We're about wrapping up on the program. Let me quickly, probably on a lighter note, Mrs. LaRouche, away from the topic a bit. Our understanding is that there's this political energy in the U.S. Of course, we know your husband is a well-known American economist and former Democratic presidential candidate. What can you tell us about the upcoming American elections, knowing that your husband was once a Democratic presidential candidate? There's this Barack mania all over the place, we've been told. But what can you tell us about the upcoming American elections?
Well, it is not over. There was actually in the Democratic primaries, Hillary Clinton won 18 million votes. That is more votes than any other presidential candidate ever got in a primary. Obama got more delegates, and therefore yesterday, because of a massive pressure by an actually corrupt Democratic Party leadership around Nancy Pelosi and Howard Dean, basically, you know, created a situation where Hillary suspended her campaign, but she did not release her delegates. So since between now and the convention end of August, the financial crisis will get much, much worse. And Hillary Clinton was the only one to address the economy and the interest of the lower 80% of the population. Therefore, you know, I would not at all call this primary process or this election process from being decided, especially because today a big shock occurred, namely that Obama, who already made a very bad move last 2 weeks ago when he was in a webcast organized by the daughter of Murdoch in London, and he stressed that he would even make the special relationship between Great Britain and the United States better than it was during Bush, and even give Great Britain the lead sometimes. Okay. Now, that already was a bad sign. But yesterday he made a terrible thing. He addressed the IPEC conference, and there he basically said that he would recognize Jerusalem as the unified capital of Israel, that he would not take the military option against Iran off the table, and he made a whole bunch of other terrible statements calling the Palestinians terrorists and similar things. So I think there is a big shock. The Palestinian leaders denounced the speech. Leaders in America in the Democratic Party are completely shocked because obviously Obama is trying to be now right of McCain, because these are all issues which McCain would not go so far. So, you know, Obama is obviously, you know, going totally out of control. And
Our time is up, unfortunately, Mrs. LaRouche, let me thank you. Let me thank you and our sponsor, Unique Trust Financial Services. Your loan in less than 48 hours. They say no. We say why not? And let me thank my producer Roland Aqua Stevens for this. And before we go. Let me come back to Mrs. LaRouche and ask for her concluding remarks in just 60 seconds.
Well, I think we are at a very important historical moment, and everybody who is listening to this program and finds an element of truth in what I said, especially about the absolute need to have a just new world economic order and to really change the economic policies for the developing countries and really put real development on the agenda, they should join with us because, you know, the LaRouche movement and the Schiller Institute, we are linked with all the progressive forces around the world who agree that the spirit of the non-aligned movement, and you mentioned the President Cuomo, which, you know, I think is really, you know, the spirit we have to go back to. And I think that the 30 years of the globalization were an error. We have to go away from that. We have to put the real development back on the agenda and put man in the center of all our endeavors. And then I think there is nothing we cannot fix on this planet. So please join us.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mrs. Helga Zeb-LaRouche. She is the international president of the Schiller Institute, chairperson of the German political party Citizens Movement Solidarity. Of course, she's as well a journalist for Executive Intelligence Review and wife of the American economist and former Democratic presidential candidate, Lyndon LaRouche. And again, thanks to Michelle Rasmussen, Michelle, you are the reason why we're having this program. Michelle Rasmussen of Schiller Institute in Forum Copenhagen, Denmark, whose leaflet she gave to my producer at Copenhagen Business School. She's the basis. She's the reason why we're doing this show. And thanks for that. Also, thanks to George Hollis in the United States, facilitating the telephone connectivity to Germany from the USA. Thank you very much to our technicians, to Tanko Rashid, Charles Mensah, Billy, to Richard Kwanza and Emmanuel, producer of this program, is Roland Aqua Stevens. Many thanks to the Schiller Institute, and again, many thanks to you, Mrs. LaRouche, for joining us. Thanks.
Yes, it was nice to be with you.
Have a good evening.